Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm your host, Kyle Swagger. Sorry, we were incognito last week. In fact, we weren't here at all last week. Deeply apologize. This week's episode is brought to you by our lovely friend on Twitter, SF Drummer. SF Drummer.
Russ.
Made this all possible today. Russ.
Good man. He's in the chat room. Yeah. Hello, mate. Thank you.
Thank you, Russ. And that's why we were able to bring you we literally could not hear one another last week. So deeply apologize. Sorry. We didn't have an episode last week, but we're going to get you caught up from last week and this week's news. And it's a good thing that there was a lot of news last week.
Mostly because there's bugger all news this week.
Yeah. At least we had some for the Mac show, but not as much for the photo show. We've got the regular panel with you guys again this week. The three staple people that's been on the show. We'll do the roundtable as always. Start out with Chris Forsman from Ars Technica. Chris, how's the hangover?
Oh,
I thought you were going to say, how's it hanging for a second? It's a bit personal.
Well, he looks a bit rough. Was it a rough night?
I really look that bad?
It was
an interesting night. I'll leave it at that. Interesting night.
If you could open your eyes, you'd be able to tell.
No. It's exactly what he's saying. He'd rather sleep right now than be here with us. Thank you for coming on, though.
Oh, that's not true.
We appreciate it. It's great to have you back. Ewan.
Hello, mate.
No hangover, I guess.
No, mate. I didn't get much chance to do any drinking last night. I hightailed it back from seeing a customer and walked in to do the big show and basically had 15 to 20 minutes before I was due to start. So I've that, and then I went to bed and then I woke up and then I started doing this. So
no time for
drinking.
Podcasting pool.
Yeah.
That's right. Podcast first, brew later. Good man. Last but not certainly least, I call him the G-Man. You might know him better as Alex G. Fox on Twitter and Twittery thingy and thingy-dingy-to-do. How you doing, Alex? You were not with us last week, so you missed all the Star Trek sound effects that we had going on.
Yeah, I wasn't incognito at all. I was in Hampstead. That's a very expensive suburb of London for anybody that doesn't live in London. So it was a very funny joke if you understood it. I'm just letting you know.
Whether you live in London or not has got nothing to do with it, because last night I got some. I threw one over on James in the big show because he was telling me about the something line, the Piccadilly line, and right. I told him he got the wrong colour on the tube map.
I bet he lives in Luton. That's not really London, is it?
I'll take it.
Oh, you can have it.
Victory's a victory.
And back to the photo show.
Yes, and back to the photo show and to the last 2 weeks of news, getting you caught up. Guys, let's dive right in on this, and it's the Nikon, however you want to say it, D4 rumors. What should people know? I mean, that's what I say. What do you need to know? I mean, first off, I will go to you, Alex, Mr. Nikon man first, because well, let's just face it, you know, you have about, what, 550, 200 of them?
Not D4s, but of various other cameras. I haven't got that many. Right,
the odd one.
Yeah, the odd one or 20. Yeah, I think it's... Oh, I can hear myself back. It's quite interesting. I think it is about time that Nikon, especially their higher-end cameras, I think it's about time they had a refresh. I mean, there was rumours much earlier on this year of a D4, a D800, I think they were talking about a 700S and various things. And then it was the earthquake in Japan, wasn't it? And the tsunamis that went along with it. And a lot of the factories were wiped out. And then, of course, you've got the economic problems that the entire world is suffering from. So they are very, very behind on what I would say their normal refresh cycle is. And if you think about it at present, the highest resolution you can get is, what's it, about 24 megapixels on the Nikon? Is that the D3X or I think it's 23? I know I've got one and I can't remember what
24.
There you go. And Yeah, so it's about time. But not only the D4, I think they really do need the D800 or the D70S because of their consumer market cameras they've caught up to the very bottom end of the prosumer or pro cameras. So the pro cameras really need to start pushing forward again. I really think so anyway.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that, you know, you're talking about the economic times, you know, what the world's going through, you know, this global recession, whatever you want to call it. And you're talking about them trying to, you know, do something with the market. But with the price point of the D3X, 5,400 pounds still around right now. I mean, Chris, what's your thoughts on this? I mean, are people as pros, I mean, are you leaning towards this right now? Are you thinking, I'm fine, man. My credit card is already maxed out. I don't know if I really need this.
That's a tough thing to consider. But if you think about it, the top-end Nikons haven't been updated for like 3 or 4 years. So, you know, at least here in the States, people are going to get on the edge of when they can start claiming their depreciation on the equipment, and a lot of them will probably be in a position to upgrade. I don't know if shooters are necessarily looking for more resolution from a high-end Nikon per se, but there's definitely been a lot of advances in the sensor technology in the last 4 years that, you know, especially like things like low light sensitivity and video recording capabilities and all kinds of other things that Nikon could be incorporating, in their high end stuff that just hasn't made it there yet.
So limited market right now, but you're saying it needs to happen.
It's a limited market anyway.
True.
When you think about it, I mean, how many people are buying Nikon's flagship camera to begin with?
There's only one on this panel, and that's Alex.
It's only because Hasselblads are too expensive.
That's right. you've talked for a while now about, you know, if you weren't so heavy into Canon, you would have switched by the sound of it. But
I've got a serious twitch on at the minute. I really have. I mean, it's for this
camera.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw
the upcoming.
When I saw this, I've got to say, you know, this is going to be a full frame camera. So, you know, everything that I want is full frame for a start. £6,000 price tag. It's there or thereabouts for a top end. You'd expect good quality. You're going to get good quality with this. I would buy this satisfied sight unseen that I was going to get something that was extremely good. They're talking about it coming with a Sony sensor, which, you know, Sony have got a good rep on the sensors, so that might be a nice thing as well. As they're talking about 36 megapixels, which, you know, capture size is good for me because people want to blow things up to posters and that kind of thing. So I'll take the extra megapixels here, definitely, in the extra resolution I'm going to get. The price is right. If I came into some money right now, some old aunt dies, leaves me 20 grand, 10 grand, I wouldn't be a Canon man anymore. And I'm sorry, but the Canon are close to losing me anyway. They're with some money in my pocket at that kind of level where I could dump the lenses as well. They'd all be on eBay next week for this.
So that's interesting. I mean, that's just how dissatisfied you are with Canon right now. You're willing to chuck it all away for an upcoming. By the sound of it, you would even go with the older model, the 3D. X.
Well, no, I wouldn't. Model. No, I absolutely wouldn't.
Oh, you wouldn't?
No,
okay.
I, to say I'm dissatisfied with Canon is not the case. I've got a fantastic Canon camera that I would never swap in a million years for anything else. I love it to bits. But if I'm sitting thinking, well, it's getting on a bit now, you know, it's 6-7 years old, it's going to have an upgrade at some point. Do I want to buy what's the top of the range Canon now? Hell no. Do I want to buy the top of the range Nikon? Well, if it's the D4, oh, bloody hell. Me and the wife could be having some serious conversations in a divorce court.
Well, you're going to be, I was going to say, you're at least going to be spending at least the rest of the year, if not the next 5 to 6, on the couch.
He's got a very nice couch. He'll be all right.
Yeah.
No, interestingly, I think it really comes down to the low light. I mean, yeah. I go back to what I said the other week. I used a Canon, and, you know, it's a nice enough camera. But when I put it on the computer and I was trying to fix some issues because of the lighting in the room was such that I had to play silly buggers, I couldn't believe how poor the quality of the low light level was and how much, you know, how much grain and how much noise was on the picture. And you sort of take for granted, once you've got a camera, it's like having a computer. Once you've got, you know, you go from, say, an old PC to a new Mac and you go, wow, it hasn't crashed every 5 minutes. You sort of get used to that as the, you know, the starting point.
You're going back to the old iMac there, the G4, because that's the only time that you've ever been able to go up to a new iMac, a new Mac, and it not fall over with something.
Okay.
Not of late.
But the point I'm trying to make is, I shoot something. I shot some stuff, funny enough, in Hampstead last week. I shot some stuff which really needed to be in a studio with all the softboxes and everything I could possibly muster. And what I ended up doing... Oh, that's a good noise. And again. Blimey, where are we? What I ended up doing is virtually shooting, and not in pitch black, but I shot it because I couldn't get a soft box or anything where I was. I had to do it in the gallery. I shot it and I lit so far across it that when I turned the lights off, I could see that there was a box in front of me, but not much more. And I just stuck it on, I think I stuck it on 100 ISO, whatever the low equivalent is on that camera. And I just let the camera expose it for, I think it was 2.5 seconds, at about, I can't remember what it was now, it was about F18 or something. And I put it on my computer and had a look. And
that must be somebody from Canon.
It must be.
No, I'm just telling you, my dogs think Alex is full of it.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
They cannot believe what they're hearing.
Oh, thank God I'm not alone.
Oh, thanks. Oh, I have Don McAllister film.
Reader's Digest. Anyway,
when I looked at it, it was fine. There was no noise. It was absolutely fine. And it was all I could do to get a shot, which didn't, because it was a box, I didn't want shadows inside it and everything. It looked fine. And I know I couldn't have done that on a Canon.
Okay, well, that sums it up then. Obviously, Alex is not going to get a new Canon camera. And we're all in favor of it's a good time for Nikon to go in and put out this camera. And if Ewan's aunt dies, he's going to buy one. Is that pretty much what we're saying?
Sums it up, I think.
Yeah. I haven't got an aunt who's available to die, unfortunately, but there you go.
Unfortunately.
There's not like a queue of aunts waiting to leave me 50 grand.
God, let's move on.
Auntie Jean, if you're listening, I didn't mean it.
Kodak. Shopping intellectual property wares. Is it strapped for cash? Did I say Canon or Kodak?
Kodak.
I think, because I've got Canon on the brain right now. Okay, as long as I said Kodak. Because I could see after this, Canon would be shopping its intellectual property wares. Kodak, known in the name. We all know Kodak. It's been around for freaking ever. Yeah, what do you make of this? I mean, Ewan, I mean, you're more the legal analyzer here. You're more of the numbers guy.
Well, basically, patents at the moment are the biggest weapon in any technology company's arsenal, it would seem. I mean, everyone is suing everyone else for patent disputes. Patents are being used to stop sale of competitive products. If you've got a patent, you've got a nuclear arsenal, effectively, and the possession of patents seems to be the way of nullifying the competition from suing you. So do you want one of Kodak's patents? Well, the only problem you got with patents is that they're all well and good if you go out carpetbagging with them, but at some point, if someone calls liar, liar, pants on fire, you've got to be able to produce something that proves that you've looked after the patent, you've enforced the patent, you've made something of it, and do you really want to do that with Kodak's patents?
Well, that's the question.
I mean, Apple...
By the way, Chris, just so you know, patents in translation to American English is patents.
Okay. Now I get it. Okay. Sure.
Your dog should have barked the whole way through that.
Go on, Alex. What, am I talking rubbish then?
No, I've just tried to get my own back.
Ah, good man.
Go on, Chris. I mean, you were actually making a valid point.
Yeah. Kodak has already sued Apple and RIM over digital camera patents because they have cameras in their smartphones and they allegedly use Kodak patented technology. So Kodak has a valuable portfolio. And the latest analysis I've seen is that that portfolio is actually worth 5 times what the company itself is worth. So it's Kodak's main asset right now.
So it's a money thing. You think really? It's a money thing? I mean, they're strapped for cash right now because we're talking on this show that we don't feel the love from Kodak. Yeah, they make good stuff. Yeah, we know the name. They've had the name, but it's a bit like Polaroid. It seems. I mean, it's where are they?
Well,
what have they done in a while?
Yeah. I mean, a huge part of their business was film.
Well, that's the end of Chris then.
Would you, Alex, would you like to pick up from that?
Yeah. So if I go from a huge part of their business was film and carry on from there. Now, what Kodak did, and they moved, obviously, they had to move from film. They still make professional films, not all of them, which is a problem for me. But they did go really heavy investment into sensors and cameras when digital photography, not when it first came out, that was sort of the Casio type thing. But, you know, they really did, and patent-wise, they did an awful lot of inventing, if you like, when it all first started. And I think they're still, I don't know what percentage of their income is from sensors, but they make some very, very good high-end sensors still. So that, you know, the technology and the patents are there. You know, Kodak started off with such a big base. I would imagine, you know, maybe they don't make too many cameras, but I'd imagine that some of the inventiveness that they came up with, especially when, the sensors were first being developed, I imagine they hold an awful lot of patents because they were practically the market leaders at first in the technology. They weren't making them, but they were the market leaders. I remember they were the first to put sort of like ambient light sensoring into the top of the cameras, etc. So it would take not only a light reading as a normal light reading, it would take a color of the light reading as well. So you'd get a better auto function or on the K value of the lighting. So there was a lot of things that they invented, if you like. So I imagine they've got an awful lot to sell on.
The ambient light thing you're talking about reminds me of actually those Philips TVs from a long time ago, a few years back. They had the light of the, never mind. That's the first thing that came to mind.
I've got a point to make here that, you know, people are talking about patents and saying the relevant value of the company is based on the patents, you know, could be worth more than the company, that kind of stuff. Your patent is worthless until someone wants to pay something for it. Then it has a notional value. In terms of what that then means to someone else, it depends how you've treated that patent up to that point. Because if that patent then is not been enforced with contra technology that's been pushed over and above that patent, the patent's invalid. So you may actually be looking at a brick in terms of a patent. It's of no use whatsoever. And you won't know that until you try and enforce it. If you're buying this as a weapon, you might get a spear kit with nothing to put it together with. This could be like an IKEA spear pack. It's not that good as a weapon. It'll break the first time you use it. There is buying patents is an enormously risky strategy.
Sounds like the stock market right now.
Well, selling them isn't as risky as buying them.
Agreed. Because someone may not want to buy it. And once no one wants to buy it, no one's ever going to buy it.
But that's quite interesting, funny, because I was thinking of the stock market comparison. It's people don't necessarily at the moment want to invest in actually creating anything new at the moment. I think a lot of people have been put off. It's like, you know, Apple were way ahead in certain respects. So taking the computer market in particular. And so people aren't really ready to try and invest in beating them at their own game. So it's like the situation we did get in financially. People were coming up with these new and wonderful ways of moving money around or moving things around on paper to create money. And it looks like part of the tech industry are doing exactly the same. They're not out there investing in time and effort and trying to come up with a new thing. They're trying to play the money game on paper. And that's only going to be a bad for us as consumers in the long run, because of no one's going to be out there inventing. No one's going to be out there designing.
Well, that's exactly. I mean, that's exactly right. And before we get too much into, you know, bagel tech economics and all these things, I mean, because, you know, we're kind of going down that path a little bit. We're kind of getting away from Kodak. But I mean, the thing of the deal is with Kodak is I'll kind of just go around to all of you. Is this a sign that Kodak is a bit weak right now? They're needing the cash, Chris.
Yes.
Okay, Alex.
Definitely.
Okay. Back into cameras now, and it's the Fujifilm Finepix F600 EXR. It's something we were going to talk about last week, and unfortunately, we just couldn't do it. But this week, we are going to dive into this. The 16 megapixel, it's got the CMOS sensor in it, 15 times optical zoom, 3-inch LCD on this thing, a nice big screen on this little Fujifilm. Alex, we're going to get to you. I know you're in love with Fujifilm, but we'll kick it over to you in first. Nice little compact camera. I mean, from what I can see out of this thing,
it's a good looking camera, isn't it? I mean, it's got a nice appearance to it. The black version that's on the Engadget story looks pretty cool. Nice little pop-up flash, probably reasonably powerful, enough for it sort of a meter and a half. 16 megapixel sensor, tiny, but okay. It's not too bad. The stabilization on the zoom is doable as well, handheld. You know, you brace yourself a bit, you're going to get away with it. Some of these super zooms, you've got ridiculous zoom quantities and you're never going to be able to handhold them anyway. And I think what's quite interesting is the GPS stuff is now saying, right, rather than just tagging your photo as to where you were, we've now got this opportunity to tell you what's around where you are as well as. So you can go down to your local average landmark and you'll get your GPS location for it, and then it'll tell you the other landmarks that are around you. So it's kind of almost hitting this Google Maps integration thing, and I think it's a thing that cameras have got to do. They've got to start embracing the idea of API and interaction and web connection, and you could be seeing very soon, I think, if they've got any kind of nous about them at all, you should be seeing a camera, especially a compact, coming with a 3G prepaid card in it that's going to take you everywhere and everywhere across, and we're going to push you up to the Flickr and all that kind of stuff. It's got to happen.
That's a heck of an idea. That's a heck of an idea. Yeah, I mean, it's a heck of an idea. I mean, Chris, you were the one, actually, we got into a debate a couple of weeks ago about, you know, cell phone cameras. It's right. What you use. It's your in-pocket camera. Nothing really like this is probably in your arsenal. If you want DSLR, that's where you go. If not, you go with the iPhone. But with something like this, I mean, particularly on top of this, with 1080p movie capture, and to have that connectivity through, if we could actually get there, would you start leaning towards these kind of cameras? I mean, would this be something that says, fine, I would like a better camera than my iPhone. I would, and since it connects to the net and people know where I am and they can come find me or whatever it may be.
It would be great to what you're essentially saying is, wouldn't it be great if an actual camera worked as well or as conveniently as my iPhone camera did? Of course. The answer is absolutely.
Well, that's short and sweet.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
I mean,
it's got to happen, or the camera market is dead.
Alex, sum us up on this, because you know, I definitely want to get into questions because we got a lot this week. But wanted to touch on this before we did.
Okay, now I particularly like this camera. It sort of contains all the bits that myself, Ewan, and you know, latterly Chris have said that we would like if we had a built our own compact camera with a tick box and a wish list. This doesn't have all the crappy gimmicks, but it has all the things that we would actually like that would be useful.
Yeah.
And there's one more thing that we never picked. I mean, it's got these 360 panoramic built-in things and stuff, and they're all very clever. But one thing that I picked up on this camera when I first read it a couple of weeks ago was they've got a new type of three-pronged technology for image stabilization, and it's got the normal stabilization that every camera has and auto ISO and normal stuff. But one of the things it does have, it's got a motion detection sensor in the camera. And what that does is, if you're in a low-light environment, it knows you're in low light. And if you're taking a picture of your friends or whatever it is, it knows whether these people are moving or not. And that is really, really clever, because if you set it on auto function, if it sees people are moving, it will adjust the camera to give you the fastest possible shutter speed with in combination with all the other factors. So normally in low light, what it will do, it will open it up. It will do various things. The only thing you'll never be able to override is the fact that someone moves. The speed is normally so slow that they will blur out automatically. But what this camera with the motion sensor does is it will take into account if the person you're trying to photograph is moving and try and find the best combination of auto settings to accommodate a moving person in those circumstances. So for a party going down a pub in your handbag nightclub camera, this possibly, I mean, I really do believe it, innovation-wise, this possibly may be the greatest innovation for handbag party cameras that there's been in many, many a year. And I really, I know I say this about a lot of cameras, but I am seriously looking at going out and getting one of these because I think this is the put in your pocket and get a really good shot on automatic camera.
That's exactly what I thought you'd say because you're Mr. Fujifilm guy. No, it is a nice camera. I'm just kidding.
No, Alex is right. This is ticking an awful lot of boxes for me as well. And it's not just, I think it's a, to say it's a handbag camera, Alex, I think it's more than that. It is more than that.
No,
it's
doing
so much more than that.
It is, but it gives the ability for the girl in the handbag that doesn't care a jot about photography. This will make her, I mean, if you think about Facebook and all the pictures you see that are out of focus, the reason, they're not actually out of focus. The camera's focused, but the person has moved.
Hmm.
This is absolutely brilliant. I mean, there's no two ways about it. The functionality of this camera, and I don't want to use the word idiot-proof to call people idiots, but the auto functions on this camera should resolve the last of the, or help to resolve the last of the biggest issues you ever had with automatic photography. And I really think this is a really, really good camera.
Hands down, I think it's one that we're definitely gonna be looking for. And it does look like a nice camera, one that I would actually pick up. If Ewan's idea actually comes into the picture with this 3G and everything, it's a beautiful idea, Ewan. I think that's where you're right. It needs to go that way.
If the camera industry hasn't had the idea before me, they're in big trouble.
Well, there you go. Why don't we get into questions, guys? We only got a couple this week, so let's go ahead and get into those so Ewan can get out of here. We got a couple for you this week, and let's get into it right now. First one's from Miles from Tampa, Florida. It says, "Hi, guys. Loving the podcast and glad that Kyle is there to keep you all on your feet or your feet on the ground." Yeah, I guess I am too, but I kind of get off most of the time. Don't let them get away from you, buddy. Thank you, Miles. My question is I want a day out lens for my Canon 7D, and I've been looking at a few lenses. The obvious choice is for a little bit of a zoom and wide angle, that is a Canon 24mm through 105mm LUSM lens. But I wanted to know if the guys thought I should go for something else. I've also looked at the 17mm through 85mm F4 through 5.6 IS USM lens and the 24 through 70mm F2.8 L USM lens. Thanks for the help that you can offer. Obviously, you're the Canon man, Ewan, so I'll go to you first.
For a start, the thing's on price, because I think the 24 to 70 is sort of $300 to $500 in price, and the other two are $1,000 plus. I think they're nearly £1,000 over here, so they're probably nearly $2,000, some of them. If he's got a 7D, he's got a crop sensor, so his 17 to 85 isn't going to be 17 to 85, it's going to be 38 to 140. There you go. So it's giving him a very similar range to the to nothing else on there. The 24 to 105 is a great versatile lens. I've got one of those myself. The only thing you worry about with those is when you go across huge focal length ranges like that, you get very soft at the top end, and they're not great usually in terms of quality. That's an expensive lens though, so you'd hope to get a lot more from them. But to be honest, for the money that he's going to pay for the Canon lens there, for what he's going to get from it, if you want a day out lens, don't be spending £1,000 on it, $1,500, $1,800. You want to be spending, you know, about 500 bucks tops, and there's plenty of lenses out there you can get. Just go and have a look at B&H Photo and see what they've got in, and the Sigmas, the Tamrons, the Tuckiness, those kind of things will give you a far better lens that you're quite happy to drop over the edge of a waterfall, as opposed to something like this, which is going to be too expensive and probably not going to... I've got to say, one of the other problems I've got with Canon at the moment, I'm not a big fan of their glass at the moment. I think Sigma are doing it better.
Anything to add on that, Chris?
I mean, I kind of see where he's going choosing these lenses. I know for myself, like I sort of would lean towards the 24-105L because I think it's kind of a compromise between, a 2.8 heavy zoom and something compact and lightweight. For me personally, that would work. But I think I agree with you in that unless he really is looking for money to burn, it might be better spent on something with a little bit wider range that's designed for a crop sensor camera. Like you said, Tamron makes a really great, just going out everyday kind of lens.
Right.
We call them tourist lenses.
Yeah, they do a 28-105, and they definitely do a 28-250 and a 28-300. So,
I can hear you chopping a bit there, Alex. You want to put your two cents in?
Yeah, it wasn't so much that. I mean, it's the word day out lens. Now, I've got some nice lenses. You know, that's what I do. But I've also got. I mean, the word Tamron is what sprung to mind when I take, a cheaper Nikon out, and I do go out for the day to, you know, with the kids or whatever, and I actually need to take a camera or something. I wouldn't dream of taking what I would call a proper lens with me because it's a day out. Mm-hmm. There's every chance it's going to get a knock, it's going to get wet, it's going to get this sort or the other. And what I was leaning over to do was trying to grab a bag which is full of Tamron lenses. And I think I've got one in there which is, I think it's a 28-300 macro zoom lens, and I think it cost me about £250. Mm-hmm. And it's not the greatest lens you're ever going to see, but it's a day out lens. If it does get damaged, I'll be disappointed but not heartbroken, and I obviously won't need to replace it for work. So, you know, there's an awful lot of we'll do everything okay lenses, which is what I call a day out lens. I really wouldn't – if you want any of these lenses, then they're your special lens. They're the ones you keep at home and love and keep in your velvet pouch. You don't take them out with you on a day out. Yeah, so don't spend the money on it. Go and buy yourself a £200 to £300 or equivalent dollar. Well, I don't think Sigma would do something too cheap, but a Tamron or something like that. And, you know, in general, especially with the macro facility, it will give you practically everything you need.
Oh, good deal. I think, and to add, I might add a little something, guys. You guys are never an objection as long as it's a good source. There's places like eBay and these kind of things where you can buy good, cheap lenses or good used lenses as long as the seller is reputable. I mean, I've heard you guys talk about that
before. One of the lenses I'm using most at the moment, because it just happens to fit what I'm currently shooting for a firm, it is a 35mm to 105 lens, and it's an old Canon push-pull job for getting the focal length changed. No rotating rings or anything like that, nothing clever. Just it's almost like a little, you know, a 17th century telescope, and it takes a cracking picture. I got that off eBay. It was £42.
And if you're really working on a budget, I think that's always a good place to go. Again, as long as the seller has a good history and, you know, and that's what he does, sells lenses.
Russ in the chat room says, I've got a great day out lens. It's a Lumix TZ10. Good point.
Yeah, that is a good point. Thank you, Russ. Our last question for this week, unfortunately, Ewan, this is directed towards you, kind of, but I don't see the guy's name. Maybe you can elaborate in just a moment. Just discovered Bagel Tech Photo after hearing Ewan on British Mac. Great show. I've downloaded and listened to the three so far. Lots of fun and learning lots. Good to hear. I'm used to being a really keen photographer as a teenager, a real camera Zenith 35mm SLR.
Quality.
As he says, good in a riot. but discovered beer and girls, and they used up all my money. They usually tend to do that. I've been thinking about getting into digital photography for a long time, and now at the age of 46, my wife has given me a project, which is where I need your help. She's an interior designer and wants me to take internal shots of her projects. I've picked up a D50 body from eBay to get started with so that I can shoot raw for control in post-processing and have aperture. I'm looking to buy a Nikon 35mm 1.8G DX AF S lens, but in the meantime, playing with I guess it's a Nikon 35-80mm f4 5.6D. I've never been great with flash, and speed lights seem to cost a packet. Finally, my question is, what are your tips for internal shots using natural lighting or available light sources as much as possible with no lighting rigs?
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah,
he says he has a pretty good tripod, by the way, too, just so you know. Go ahead, Chris.
Really what it boils down to is, you know, even without extra light, as long as it's got a tripod, even without the mirror lockup, I think with a wide angle lens shooting an interior, you're still going to get a reasonably sharp image. You know, you're going to have long, exposures. And that's going to be an issue, but I think with a good tripod, especially if it's weighted down, maybe you'll need a cable release, or you can do. I mean, there's other tricks you can do, like using a self timer to have it release after you stop touching the camera. But it sounds completely doable with what he's already got. Mm-hmm. I think the 35-1.8 lens is going to just be a nicer, sharper lens overall. It'll help the shutter speed a little bit, but not a lot. I mean, we're only talking about like two stops maybe. So you're only talking about two shutter speed difference. It's not like he's going to be able to suddenly handhold the pictures anyway. So, I think it's completely doable with what he has.
Opinion, Alex?
Yeah. Well, it's something I did quite a lot of, especially because of it always happens. I mean, you say the same thing. You go to one place to do one specific thing, and then they say, oh, while you're here, can you?
Mm.
And you say, yeah, well, if I had a lorry load of all the right lights and cameras and lenses and everything, because you didn't tell me that's what you wanted. Right, to start off, the Nikon D50, I have found that, other than the D40X, possibly the worst camera Nikon made in a very long time. And I'm glad you bought it on eBay. But there's probably quite a few of them on eBay, I imagine. When I say it's one of the worst, Nikon, since a certain time, they bought out the D60 as well, didn't they? Since, say, the D80, Nikon haven't made too many pigs, but they've made a couple. And I found this one might have been one. But still, it's not a bad camera if you're doing, funnily enough, what you're doing, because there is no issue with speed of the camera. Right, first of all, I would definitely stick it on the tripod. I wouldn't bother with a cable release. I'd do exactly the trick that Chris was saying about using the self-timer. I don't think a 1.8 lens is going to make any difference either, because you're going to be on a tripod. And if you're going to do an internal shot at 1.8, very little of it's going to be sharp anyway. Because if you're doing an internal room shot, you really need to sort of, you know, bring things into focus. You know, so you're going to have to stop down a bit. So I would say, financially, until you decide what body you want to use, that you, what do you say, you got a Nikkor 35-80 f.4, that's fine. I mean, the only thing I could suggest is you've got a D, so that's not fine. You really need a DX. Go and find yourself an inexpensive DX that goes, I think I've got some DXs somewhere. I think they go down to 18. And they weren't expensive. I think I bought them because they were literally, oh, is that all they are? Or I have one of them just to keep in a bag. Because they really aren't a lot of money. So I would go to something which is an 18 DX lens, stick it on. Again, remember, put your ISO as low as you can. I mean, I think the 50 goes down to 100. Stick it on 100 and let it have a second or two exposure, because it's still got the good low light reproduction on the D50. Just leave it, let it shoot itself off. You know, go down to somewhere like f11, f13, where it's nice and sharp on the lens, and just let it do it. You know, you don't need anything expensive. And if you, you know, if there's no speed element, which there isn't in this thing, then just, you know, let them have a long exposure. What you've got will do what you want. And you don't need to spend a lot of money.
Except get a new camera. Ewan, go ahead and sum us up so we can get you out of here.
I'm in danger of giving away one of my best secrets here anyway, though, but one of the things that I spend a lot of time doing is shooting interiors and large voids, particularly interiors. And one of the problems there is the fact that there's never usually enough light to get anything in anyway, and you end up putting it on horrendously long exposures. The thing to remember, though, as Alex says there, take it down to your lowest ISO rating. So that's going to boost your exposure time to the higher levels. And actually, don't be afraid of going a very long exposure. Go as long as you possibly can, because if you are getting any kind of shake or mirror shake, that kind of stuff, when it flips, that's going to be reduced instantly. Also, try and make sure that you're well braced. Like you say, weight your tripod, weight your lens, weight if it's a longer lens. But then also think about, instead of shooting in an automatic mode where the camera makes it all, just use the camera as a light meter, get the reading from it, and then start thinking about adding your own light afterwards on the longest exposure you can possibly manage. So the more light you're adding, take more stops off. So typically I'll get some flash units in my hand, lay them out around a workshop or something like that, take a light reading, maybe take 5 stops off that so that I'm getting that little bit longer exposure because I'm going to be adding more light to it. And then what I do is put the camera on manual at that setting, -5 stops. And while the camera's going, I'll go around and add the light myself. So I'll trigger a flash head unit. You could do it with a torch if you really wanted. It's up to you. Get one of those really powerful night sun torches from Home Depot or B&Q. And just stand there and flash that around the room. If you're shooting in RAW, there's the best part. There's the best use case of all for shooting in RAW. Because if you've underexposed it a tad, doesn't matter. If you've overexposed it a tad, don't matter. And if you need to just tweak it here and there, very, very flexible and easy to get a good output. The key part that most people think of when they're shooting large voids is they try and take the picture that they see with the camera, or they try and take the picture that's generated by the flash unit and the sync with the flash unit. The best thing you can do is step away from syncing with your flash units, but use your flash units as a source of light. Go to all manual and trigger it yourself. You don't get the sync issues. You don't get any problems there. And if you add too much light, just take another picture.
Yeah, exactly. There's the only other thing I'd say is it's a perfect place for the reflectors. Everyone says, oh, why use reflectors? This is a perfect scenario for reflectors, mm-hmm. especially when you've got light traveling into a room in a direction. If you put the reflectors, obviously out of camera shot, but if you have the light coming towards you, and it depends what angle you want to shoot the room, don't you? But white card, a roll of white paper, or reflectors are a perfect, this is a perfect example for a good place to use them. You can bounce the ambient light you've got back into the corners that are a bit too dark, and then you're using that natural light, and you should, not always, but you should be able to even the light around the room a lot better with some reflectors, which again, remembering, you don't have to buy, you can make your own.
Right. Ewan, I've got one question for you real quick.
Shoot.
Who sent, that question?
Gregor Fisher.
Okay.
Gregor
Fisher. It's not here at the bottom of the question.
I forgot to paste his name on. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the question. You guys want to get your questions in. As you can see, we'll go into full detail. BigelTechPhoto@gmail.com is the place to do it. We will get to your question. It may take a while, but we will eventually get to your question. As you can see, we will answer it in depth fully for you so you can get the best out of your pictures. I've got to thank our sponsors before we wrap up this week's show. UK2.net, our lifesaver, our lifeline for the entire network. Go to BigelTechNews.com. That is the network website, which the website looks beautiful now. If you guys haven't been over there, go check it out. Russ has done a great job on the design, as well as our sysadmin Sarah, getting everything up and running. I think everybody around the world can see us now. I couldn't for a little while here in the Philippines, but can now. BagelTechNews.com. Get subscribed to the photo show over there, the Mac show, the big show, all the shows over there. Get over there, get subscribed. But while you're over there, go down to the bottom of the page, and you're going to see our sponsor there, which is UK2.net. They keep the network alive. They keep us going. They just gave us a new server. This is why we switched everything over. We got the new website up. Everything's running so much smoother now. That's going to take you over to their website. Check out their web hosting, their domain names, whatever you're looking for, VPS servers. Have a look over there. See if it fits you. And if it does, Use our code BagelTech on the checkout. Get 15% off your order just by simply being a listener to the BagelTech Network. BagelTechNews.com. Click through UK2.net. Get what you like. Get 15% off. It's really that simple. And if you want to support BagelTech in another way, you can do that through getting a shirt from us at... and you and I keep forgetting the URL. I do apologize.
BagelTech.spreadshirt.co.uk.
Yes, BagelTech.spreadshirt.co.uk. Ships anywhere in the world. There's a million combinations over there. We've got mugs over there if shirts aren't your thing, from the Mac to the Big Show to the Photo Show. Every color you can imagine, every size you can imagine, really. I'm sure we got your size over there. You know, if you see something over there, 5 pounds goes back into the BagelTech Network. We put it into equipment, and we keep bringing the shows free to you each and every single week. So thank you so much for you guys' support. Head on over there and have a look. Before we let everybody go, and before we let Ewan go on his expedition, whatever he's doing today, we got to let everybody know where to get a hold of everybody. Chris, where can we get a hold of you?
I am on Ars Technica. I'm usually writing every day, so you can usually see some new stuff there for me, arstechnica.com. And I'm also pretty active on Twitter, at Foresmac, F-O-R-E-S-M-A-C.
Follow his tweets, especially at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're very interesting.
Warning, there is no censor.
Alex, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get me at Alex G. Fox on Twitter or Alex at twitterything.com.
How's twitterything.com coming?
I stuck a video on there. Not my video. It's just something I liked. So you should watch the video. It's a lovely piece of music as well.
I'm going to go do that right after the show. Ewan, where can we get a hold of you before you get in a cape and fly away?
No. I wish it was that good. It's not. It's only a doctor's appointment. Not for me, though. I've got, you can get me on Ewan Rankin, at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, at Bagel Tech News on Twitter. You can follow the network. And you can also get me for commercial photography work at ewanrankin.co.uk. And I've had a play with Motion and put some videos up of still images this week on the Bagel Tech News YouTube site. So go and have a cruise and have a watch of them. Make a comment.
You took the words out of my mouth because that's what I was going to say. I noticed the Motion photos. You've had a play over the weekend, and it looks like you've, in 6 hours, you didn't master it, but you sure in the hell look like
doing. I was all day. I mean, I was about 15 hours sitting playing with it, but that one photo with the eagle took me 6 hours.
It looks really good. It looks really, really good. If anybody's bothered, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Kyle Swagger, Swagger with 1G on Twitter. I'm sure we will all be back next week. Chris, you going to be back next week with us?
He's gone.
Okay, well, that answers that.
Crappy Wi-Fi.
We'll see if Chris will be back next week. We'll be back next week. We hope you'll be back next week with us, and we are looking forward to the next episode of Bagel Tech Photo. Have a good weekend. Have a good week. We'll see you soon.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.